welcome to another episode of Disney vs. Disney Debates, the podcast where we're going to figure out exactly what is the best Disney movie ever made. I am your grandmaster and host, Zane C. Weber, and I have two fantastic debaters with me today to argue Frozen vs. Atlantis, The Lost Empire. But before we introduce them, I'm going to introduce my fact checker, none other than Georgie Birdie.
Hello.
How you going, Georgie?
I'm going great. Ready to check some facts.
Going to check all the facts?
All of them.
In fact, those checks.
Done.
Excellent. Okay, well, we will be cutting back to you in a moment. But first, representing Atlantis is returning debater.
Your pal, old Matty, that's right.
That sure is him, and that is what he calls himself.
No, everyone calls me this all the time.
Yeah, no, I'm sure they do. What is your relationship with Atlantis?
My relationship with Atlantis? Well, when I was 8 years old, my favorite movie, and it's still to this day, is Raiders of the Lost Ark. So as a kid, Atlantis was my jam. It is the penultimate kind of... It's just Indiana Jones on steroids. It is a glorious pulp adventure for everyone.
I feel like you're getting into the debate early. Well done. Yeah. And going up against Atlantis with Frozen is friend of the podcast, Stacey Hobbs.
Hello. Woo.
Now, why do you love Frozen, Stacey?
Frozen. I have a lovely memory of seeing Frozen in the cinema with a friend of mine who just chortled her way through the movie and just loved it. And I think it was that moment with my friend and just being with her and someone I don't usually go to the movies with either. I think the movie's got a really special place in my heart now because I've got that special memory with my friend. It's a great movie as well, but I think that's my most solid memory of watching it for the first time was being with my girlfriend and my other girlfriend and just really having a wonderful time enjoying some Disney as an adult.
Adorable.
Mm. Correct.
So, our debate format, we have rolled a dice and Matthew has decided that he will be going first.
I'm sorry, who decided that he was going first?
You.
Who?
Matthew is your name.
Matthew? I believe I introduced myself as something different.
Shall I deduct some points?
Oh, okay. Old Matty, yes, he's going first.
Backpedal.
Yes, so in the round one, you will have 3 minutes to make your opening statements as to why your film is the best Disney film ever made.
Mm-hmm.
Then your opponent will have the same. Then we will go on to round two, a two-minute rebuttal of why your opponent's film is not the best Disney film ever made. Then we'll have a short break. We'll come back with an open discussion and questions either asked by me or by the fact checker.
Indeed.
And then after another small break, we'll come back with a one-minute summation of your arguments. And that is when the debate ends and I make my decision. And one of these films is cast out into the cold.
Mm-hmm.
It's
harsh.
Frozen would probably like say. That. Cold never bothered her anyway.
Frozen would be like,
yeah.
Atlantis is already a reward.
It's a reward for Frozen.
Okay, all right. So, there are 5 criteria that I'm looking for. Mm-hmm. I'm looking for the memorable moments. I'm looking for the message of your movie. I'm looking for the movie magic, the magic music, and the final catch-all topic, that Disney touch. Mm-hmm. What did Disney do in your film that no one else would have or could have? So, without any further ado, I will say, and in the first round, during the 3 minutes, you'll get a warning at 2 minutes, and your warning will be...
Alrighty.
And at one, at when your time is up, you'll be cut off with...
The jig is up, you jaded, jug-headed jack-in-the-box!
Such a rude cartoon. That is a rude cartoon character.
Darkwing Duck is a classic, and I will not have you besmirch.
That's a point off, I think.
Oh, no. I've lost before I began.
All right. Okay, so your time starts when you start speaking, Matthew. Why is Atlantis the best Disney film ever made?
Hail Atlantis. Alrighty, my quixotes. Atlantis is the greatest Disney film ever made because it is the ultimate fantasy action adventure film Disney's ever done. And I say film here in the most snobbish sense. Set in 1914, it tells the story of a young linguist who holds the key to discovering not only Atlantis, but the secret to its power, who joins up with a ragtag group of shameless mercenaries to do just that. In production, the creative team's motto was fewer songs, more explosions. And boy, did this treasure deliver. It utilized CGI more than any previous traditional animation, giving us the great Jules Verne-inspired subterranean journey, complete with terrifying leviathans and Indiana Jones on steroids, wink, action sequences like battles on burning blimps. All with the anamorphic format to convey the story's wide and enamoring scope. Milo is immediately likable. Voiced by Michael J. Fox, he's a dork, but one with conviction, self-belief, and confidence. No easy feat when surrounded by his lovable but intimidating new mercenary pals. I could burn all my minutes just talking about how every supporting character in this movie is worth their weight in gold. So I'll limit myself to the Italian bombardier, who was so full of natural charisma that SNL legend Don Novello literally improvised every recorded line. And James Garner effortlessly playing the John Wayne-esque powerhouse that was Lyle Tiberius, who was a dangerously likable and believable antagonist. Indeed, when I first watched Atlantis, I was on Lyle's side to the end. The music of this film was a score worthy of the best action movies, animated or not. Emotional scores propelled the character-fueled action and carried non-dialogue scenes straight to the heart, while also transporting us from culture to culture as each setting had their own distinct theme, as immersing as the unique architecture of each world. Indeed, the architecture of Atlantis, as well as the scores, were based off a kind of a melting pot of cultures from Thailand, generally Southeast Asia and Russia. So, where was I? Oh no, I've lost my train of thought, and here we are. The creative team cared about this film, and you can see that in its polished pacing and beautiful character development. Mark Aukrand of Klingon fame developed a whole damn Atlantean language, a beautiful mother language that every etymologist wants to learn. And even when they're just around a campfire sharing stories, the pacing never droops. It's a beautifully human movie about finding what you truly value, the treasure inside and all that jazz, and also boasts glorious anti-imperialist and anti-capitalist themes. I mean, literally taking the diamond of Atlantis would annihilate everyone. Not to be controversial, but I'd say that's a little currently pertinent. Armani, this is a naturally bombastic, fantastic human story that is the greatest Disney movie for our modern world. That's all, right. All Maddie kids.
All right, you did that with time to spare. Congratulations, lots of great points there. I have made many notes. Now it's time to pass it over to Stacey. Now, Stacey, you too will get 3 minutes with a warning at two, cut off with no warning at three. So your time starts whenever you start talking.
Frozen is a 2013 computer animated film produced by Disney, inspired by the Hans Christian Andersen's fairy tale, The Snow Queen. It was decided to make Frozen a movie about the love between siblings and subvert the typical romantic storyline Disney was famous for creating. Elsa literally says, "You can't marry a guy you just met in the movie," a direct poke at the Disney trope. The turning point for this was the song Let It Go. In the song, the character of Elsa became a multi-dimensional character rather than a two-dimensional villain. In Frozen, Anna has a coming-of-age story. According to Lee, the director and writer, Anna goes from having a naive view of life and love because she's lonely to the most sophisticated and mature view of love where she's capable of the ultimate love, which is sacrifice. On watching again, I could see how this movie could appeal to children. Children have difficulty regulating their emotions and can often be afraid of their anger or other strong emotions getting out of control. Elsa's motto of conceal, don't feel, don't let it go is very relatable to this challenge. And later, the climax of Let It Go, where Elsa lets go of her fear, is a cathartic and freeing experience that children can relate to and is an empowering message. The movie is chock full of memorable moments, including the opening scenes with the ice cutting and the chanting, the Do You Want to Be a Snowman montage, Love is an Open Door, which is hilarious and beautiful. Elsa creating her ice castle, taking out her hair and changing her dress and being a boss, and her whole ice battle, Hans' betrayal, and that whole climax of the story where Elsa thinks Anna's dead and Hans goes, kill her, and Anna runs away from Kristoff, who could save her, and goes to save Elsa. It's amazing. The animation itself is incredible. They did heaps of study. They went over to Norway and studied there. They actually even got mathematicians and physicians to develop programs for the snow, because snow is such a complex thing in ice to create. And fun fact, 50 effects artists and lighting artists worked together on the technology to create one single shot in which Elsa builds her ice palace. Its complexity required 30 hours to render each frame, with 4,000 computers rendering one frame at a time. The score is amazing by Christopher Beck, and he used lots of traditional Norway instruments and vocal techniques in the score. And the songs were written by Robert Lopez and Kristen and Anderson Lopez, and they became some of the most memorable in the movie, and in fact, some of the most popular in the entire Disney catalogue, with Let It Go topping the list of the most streamed Disney song of all time. And it was such a cohesive score. Frozen ranks as the highest grossing animated film of all time, the 14th highest grossing film of all time, won 2 Academy Awards for Best Animated Feature and Best Original Song, Let It Go, the Golden Globe Award for Best Animated Feature Film, the BAFTA Award for Best Animated Film, 5 Annie Awards, including Best Animated Feature, 2 Grammy Awards for Best Compilation Soundtrack and Best Song, and it got 2 Critics' Choice Movie Awards for the Best Animated Feature and Best Original Song, Let It Go. This film was a bonza. It went bonkers. Everyone loves it, and it is beautiful to boot with a powerful message. It is awesome.
All right, with 1 second to spare. Well done, Stacey.
My God,
that was a lot of work.
That wasn't even all of it. I skipped a bunch because I was like, I'm running out of time.
Well, a lot of debaters forget that after they either win or lose here, if they win, they've got to debate this movie again.
I know. I know.
This you got to save up a little something.
Got to save a little something.
Mm-hmm. Wonderful. So before we get into our second round, is there any facts that need to be checked?
I would just like to point out that I never realized it was Michael J. Fox as the voice.
Really?
And like that was just said and my mind imploded a little bit. They did actually wear T-shirts even when they were making it saying Atlantis, fewer songs, more explosions, which I think is fun. But otherwise, all the other facts checked out.
All right. Yeah. Excellent.
Hooray. Okay.
It's looking good.
So now for round two, you will get no warning. You'll just be cut off at 2 minutes. Now, this is your time to tell us why your opponent's film is not the best Disney film ever made. So we will start with Matthew, and you will have 2 minutes when you start talking.
All right, this is going to get scattershot. All right. So, Frozen. It's, in my view, and this is going to be throwing a heavy punch, I apologize, but it's a glorified pop album. All right. Let It Go is indeed a banger, and perhaps the only number, unlike the best musicals, where it doesn't drive the plot, unlike even the score of Atlantis. None of those songs in Frozen other than Let It Go drive the plot forward. For example, for the first time in forever, it doesn't reveal that much character either. It's displaying Anna like trancing about the castle. By the way, she has no reason to stay in the castle. Elsa's isolated herself, but there's no reason why Anna, who's clearly bored, isn't going out. And unlike, say, Rapunzel, who uses her time effectively while in the tower and learns many skills and is incredibly productive, all Anna does is mess about the castle all the time, dancing with paintings and whatnot. Elsa is a terrible sister and nonsensically locks herself away due to forced writing. Because the troll at the beginning, who I'll get to them in a moment, the troll at the beginning tells her explicitly, with her father present, fear is your enemy. Don't fear your power. You know, and what does he say? Fear your power. Conceal, don't feel. It's terrible force writing that has no place in a plot that's just forcing itself along. Then Elsa isolates herself again more for no rational reason for Let It Go, creating a killer snowman to go after her sister and then dooming her kingdom to eternal winter. She's Daenerys, but with ice instead of fire. Anyway, the trolls are an ugly addition. Not only is their song Fix Her Upper like incredibly problematic and kind of goes against the whole of the film, embrace yourself. But no, you let someone change you for love. Anyway, the trolls bring the whole film down from a film where everyone can enjoy it, it's decent, it's beautiful, to a 5-year-old's daytime program show.
The jig is up, you jaded jughead jack in the box.
Okay, didn't get a chance to get it all out in that one.
I had so much.
That was fun. That was fun. I enjoyed that. The passion.
All right. Well, Stacey, it is now your turn to tell us why Atlantis is not the best Disney film ever made. Your time will start as soon as you start talking.
Look, there are a lot of problems with Atlantis. First of all, with Kida is like, they're trying to build up to be like awesome and like gangbusters and brave, but there's so much problematic stuff in her writing. Firstly, she's meant to be like nearly 9,000 and she has the appearance of someone in their 20s. So kind of doesn't match up. So that, like, all of their ages don't really make sense. Secondly, they're trying to show that she was really smart and intelligent. However, Milo, the trademark straight white male, has to come in and show her, oh, have you thought of putting your hand on the thing and then turn the crystal to try this? I mean, you've had 8,000 years to try. Have you thought of this thing though? There's a whole heap of problems about the whole Atlantean race, that there had been thousands and thousands and thousands and thousands of lived history. Not like people dying off, as in people staying alive for thousands of years yet haven't been able to figure this out. And Miley comes in and goes, ha ha, I'm a straight white male. Let me fix all your problems for you. Also, Keita turns into this like boss light queen when she, you know, it's, you know, mends with the heart of Atlantis. But then she just like doesn't do anything. Just is like, just capture me now, guys. Bye. And then, of course, trademark straight white male has to go and rescue her because, you know, that's what the women's do. Get caught and then rescued. Again, Milo just being the only person to read the text. Oh, it's gone missing. You have thousands of lived history. How is no one? You literally speak the language. How have you not figured out your own? That just doesn't make any sense to me. There's hundreds of people dying within seconds. No one really cares. Whatever. The side characters are really more annoying than anything, particularly the mole. He is useless. He has no place in this adventure. He serves absolutely no purpose. And we don't get to really know those extra characters. And the movie is way above the heads of kids, but it's not sophisticated or risky enough for adults. So who is this movie for? I don't understand who this movie is for. And really, lots of action, but characters are sacrificed for this and the audience is lost.
All right. Well, you almost got it there, but... Wonderful. Okay. Mm. So that is first and second rounds. Any facts that need to be checked at this point, Georgie?
I mean, just personal opinions, but they're not facts in which we can debate.
Not yet.
Not yet. Anyway.
Okay. Well, let's take a break and we will come back with a question and answer segment. All right, so time for the question and answer segment of the show. Now, something that both of you have mentioned in passing, but mm-hmm. I would like a little bit more discussion about, is the role of side characters in your films. Mm. So specifically in Atlantis, there is a big bunch of them, a whole bunch of really dynamic characters that add into the movie.
Mm-hmm.
But also in Frozen, we haven't brought up Olaf even once.
I know, I'm surprised actually.
And there's reindeer and there's dukes.
The weasel guy. That's right.
So I would like you both to just talk for a little bit about what your characters add to your film and why they are necessary.
Okay, so Atlantis at its heart is a treasure hunting movie. And with any treasure hunting movie, the best ones is like a heist movie, is when you get a ragtag group of misfits together, each with their own specializations. And not only do they propel the plot forward, but they reveal something about the protagonist. So we've got Sweets, who's like the really charismatic, good-willed kind of doctor. You've got the mole dude, Moliere, I think his name is, and he's like this eccentric digger kind of dude. And
likes to eat dirt.
He likes to eat dirt. He loves like all of just the earth. You've got the Italian bomber, and you've got the radio operator who just doesn't give a doesn't care about anything. And except she just, you know, she punches in, she punches out. They all bring such depth to the world. And when you're introduced to James Garner, who frankly, he's a clear antagonist from the start. He's like, he's too kind of macho and too kind of eerie. And unlike, say, a certain Hans, it's foreshadowed his betrayal at the end, because Helga gets into the car, who's also a very strong female character. And she's like, well, there are people still living here. This changes everything. And then he's like, this changes nothing. And you're like, ooh, something bad's going to happen. Mm. But when you're introduced to him, because you're introduced to this wide array of charismatic, believable characters, each with a history and values and their own goals. And it's just like, it's kind of like a side note that they're a mercenary. It's like, oh yeah, this is what I do. And it's very human. And that's what I think really brings this film to the forefront of greatness.
Because it gives what should be the team of bad guys at the end
Stakes, personality. When they turn on Tiberius at the end, you understand what they're sacrificing and why they're groaning. It's like, oh, I have to do the right thing. Because you understand exactly what they're sacrificing when they deny capitalism, deny the clear good. Like, again, when I was younger, I thought, take the treasure. I don't think I put it together that people would die if they took it. But
they do explicitly state
they
that.
They do. I just don't think I just like it sunk in. But so you understand what they're sacrificing. So when they team up with Milo, you're like, these are good people. Yeah. And you understand them and you forgive them being a mercenary in the path.
All right. Yeah. And so obviously the side characters in Frozen serve a very different purpose. Mm. Let's talk a little bit about that.
Well, I think there's kind of two, off the top of my head, two categories of the side characters. They're the side characters who are kind of external and drive plot points or tension to the characters. And then there's side characters that Elsa has created and shows more about her internal conflicts and her internal drivers. So external ones being the Duke, who obviously is like token bad guy. I want to get them off the throne so I can have the throne and I can control things and I'm going to be, you know, small and weird looking and be, you know, the typical Disney bad guy, like the same as Old Maid in Atlanta. You're like, that guy's bad. Like, you just know. He's just bad. He's from a town with that's called Weasel Town. They've made it very obvious.
Wesselton.
But they've made it very obvious that that guy's not good news.
Yeah.
But then we also have Han, who I think it's really, really cool in a Disney movie to have someone who's traditionally the love interest and poor Anna, who's so lonely and desperate and dorky, just clings to like any sign of hope. And the whole Disney trope of falling in love in like 3 seconds, I'm going to marry this guy. And the whole fact that at the end, he just does a 180. He's like, actually, no, I'm just in this. Han's in it for Han. And you can just die now. It was kind of cool. When I watched it, I really liked that. I liked being shocked by that. I think I'm not used to Disney always shocking us in that way. Yeah. So that was refreshing and fun. And I think that shows another point of conflict because most of this movie is centering around Anna and Elsa's relationship and the fact that, you know, Elsa's like, dude, you can't marry Han. That's stupid. You just met him. And Anna's like, it's another thing that you're saying no to. And not seeing the logic there. So I think it, again, is a point of contention between the two of them and kind of fills out the world that there's other countries, that Han's from another country, another royal kingdoms. It kind of fills, and the, you know, Weaselton, there's other places in this world and they all have a point in this story, and the things that happen here are not necessarily contained to that time and place. They could affect other places
and
in this world.
That's how we get Tarzan.
Yes.
No.
Oh, the conspiracy theories.
Denied. For another
we
day.
Don't have time Denied. For that. I'm just going to talk a little bit about the other side characters being Olaf and the giant angry snowman, and they were created by Elsa and really show the two forces within her. She's got this, what is portrayed more so in the first couple of acts of the movie, being cold and heartless and having to be strong and withdrawn. And so she literally creates this embodiment of her fear and her of her anger in this giant snowman who kind of beats them off and gets rid of them and further ostracizes her and keeps her away. But then we have Olaf, who is pure friendship. He is just pure goodness. He's very naive, yes, but also he speaks, you know, at the end when he's talking to Anna and he's talking about he's trying to keep her safe and he's trying to protect her and he starts a fire and he's literally melting and she's like, you don't need to look after yourself. And he's like, some people are worth melting for, you know, like I love a friend. And having that friendship relationship, I think this movie was so unique in that so much of it was about friendships and about sacrifices you make for your friends or your loved ones being your family more so than for a love interest. Yes, there was that sacrifice of love interest, and Kristoff is a really, really cool male love interest that I could also rant about how amazing he is as a character.
We'll get into love interest.
We can do that another time. But so we're Olaf and the giant snowman, I don't think he has a proper name.
Snowball,
whatever. Sure, oh, Snowball, yes, yes.
Fact check from my brain.
Thanks, mate. but they show this like internal turmoil in Elsa, which further explains how she's gotten to this point.
Absolutely. I definitely think you've picked up on those two characters are exactly the two parts that are fighting in Elsa. Mm. That Olaf is the remnants of the love that she felt in her childhood.
It's and the same that, one that she made for Anna, like when they were little.
Olaf's sacrifice is showing what Elsa is willing, would be willing to sacrifice
and
for
has
Anna.
Sacrificed for Anna. You know, locking herself away was to protect Anna much as everyone else.
I'm very impressed with what you have both said. I have another question.
Mm-hmm. Mm.
I have yet to make any points for either of you in that Disney touch portion of the criteria. Mm. So I'm gonna give you both a chance to plead your case as to why your film is very specifically Disneyfied.
Very specifically Disneyfied. Yep. Well, I reckon it's uniquely Disneyfied because of its anti-capitalist and kind of anti-imperialist themes, in that every one of the characters is from a different country. And during a time set in World War One, some of them are on different sides. You got the Italians, you got the German, so Helga's German, you got an American, two Americans, you got an Italian, you got a Puerto Rican, I think, and you got a French person. So they all come together for this one mission of capitalism, and then they all give it up with the exception of James Garner. Yeah. And that's part of the whole point of it, that there's always a part of you that, you know, wants the treasure, but it's the better part of you that says, no, I'm going to do the right thing.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's also unique in that it does what Walt Disney would always love doing with Peter Pan and Robin Hood and Sword in the Stone and Pinocchio, is that it delved into literature and these larger-than-life adventures, and it brought those back to life because it was originally slated to be an adaptation of Journey to the Center of the Earth, and it was transformed into Atlantis, so a unique Disney adventure, but it's extremely 20,000 Leagues Under the Sea. It's extremely Journey to the Center of the Earth. It's a Jules Verne literary adventure brought to life in Disney's way.
All right. Excellent. And Stacey?
I think Frozen is so typically Disney, partially because of the Disney princess canon, and the fact that Disney is consistently pumping out these movies that have really strong female leads. And I think in Frozen you kind of get like two bangs for your buck, really, in that you've got Anna and Elsa, who are very different women but still very empowering in their own ways. Anna with her optimism and her spirit and her just love and open heart, and Elsa for all of the sacrifices she's made to protect people that by locking herself away, in that strength, and also the strength to accept herself and them in accepting each other. So I think in the whole Disney princess canon, I think this really fits in really, really nicely. And Disney's very much about getting all the beats right and getting the story right. This story was being developed since before they released Snow White, and they kept coming back to it and going, it's not right yet, it's not right yet, it's not right yet. And then they finally found something that worked, and that was making Elsa not just a villain, but making her a multi-dimensional character, giving her depth, giving her this journey. And then with Anna having that journey together and that complex relationship that sisters are. And I think that's another thing kids relate to. I remember squabbling with my sister and chucking stuff and pulling it. Like, I think anyone who's got a sibling will watch this movie and will recognize themselves in that. And I think that power of taking a childlike experience and put it into a movie where it's got magic, so it's not directly going, don't do this, kids, or whatever, but it's giving kids strategies and a role model to go, okay, I'm struggling, but I can do it. I'm struggling with this. My emotion's getting out of control. Something's out of control in my life, but I can be free of that one day, and I can take charge, and I can make choices, even though they're hard and might sacrifice a lot of things. I can do it. I can do that. I can do that. Right. Yeah.
Yeah, excellent.
I think that's so Disney.
All right. Well, I am satisfied. So we're going to take another break, and when we come back, we will give you 1 minute to make your final arguments. Okie dokie. So our final segment is 1 minute. Rebuttal, summarization. Any final points you need to make, you have 1 minute to do so. Before we get to that, Georgie, are there any facts that need to be checked?
I think all our facts are above board tonight.
All right.
Which has been nice.
We're good. All very clever.
Yeah. It's very intellectual. It's getting very intellectual.
No low cuts.
So we will start with Matthew as the dice decreed. Mm-hmm. You'll have 1 minute with no warning. I'll just cut you off at the end of 1 minute to summarize why Atlantis is the best Disney film ever made and why Frozen is not. Your time starts when you start talking.
Atlantis is the greatest Disney film ever made because, above all, I think what a great Disney film does is it goes beyond what an animated film is thought to be. So when Snow White was made, Walt Disney knew he hit gold when people cried in the theatre when Snow White died because they were taking an animation seriously. You take Atlantis seriously, it is a great action-adventure movie. And what it has above everything and what it has above Frozen is pacing. It doesn't slag, even though Frozen is subverting itself, but for the sake of subversion, Act 1 is slow. Whereas with Atlantis, Act 1 is setting up this great and big adventure and finding Atlantis, and then Act 2, the second half of Act 2 is all of the trials and tribulations they have along the way and all that jazz. And this adventure, like any great action film, has consequences. People die, and they die for their choices, like Helga sticks with Tiberius to the end, and she dies.
The jig is up, you
and
jaded jughead and jack-in-the-box.
Frozen has no consequences. No one dies.
Don't make me turn your microphone off, sir.
How dare you?
All right. Okay. Strong words. Stacey, you will also have 1 minute to summarize why Frozen is the best Disney film ever made and why Atlantis is not. Your time starts when you start talking.
Frozen created this incredible fantasy world that hits so close to home. It talks about mending relationships, embracing yourself for who you are and letting go of fear. It talks about putting your family first and loving yourself and loving your family. It has these glorious songs that give us so much character development and move that story along, and they're so catchy. People will sing them for ages. The whole community just embraced. I remember there was a time you couldn't go to the shops without seeing a little girl in an Elsa costume. The kids loved it, and I think that is so clear why they did. They developed characters. They didn't have a lot of them, really, but the characters they had, they really went into and really, you got to know them really, really well so that you felt like you're watching your family, they became your family, and then you had that power to take that message out into the world. And it was done in such a beautiful way. It's a beautiful, beautiful movie, and I think it will be timeless because they worked so tirelessly to make it look amazing.
Perfectly timed. All right. Well,
damn, that was good.
I have some maths to do. Oh. So while I am off doing said maths, please take this time to tell each other why you like the other person's film.
Shall I go first?
Perhaps. Go for it. Go for it.
While I'll admit quite shamelessly, I don't enjoy Act 1 of Frozen. It takes me quite a while to get through. But once it gets through that and starts subverting and... It's a very well-told story. The pacing is good. Kristoff, he's a lovable kind of Han Solo-esque character, although I will pick up that you said Han instead of Hans. He's not Han Solo.
He's Han. Maybe I watched that.
Just subliminally getting the Han Solo.
Kristoff, however, is Han Solo. and it's great to watch. Anna is incredibly likable, and Elsa is a powerful character. And at the end, when they... get together. And I think its greatest strength is that sisterly love. And that's the most real human part of it. It just elevates the film beyond your typical Disney musical. Beyond your typical film. It's remarkable. Yeah.
And that's what I liked about Atlantis too. It was so different. And the stylistically, the art, like it was beautiful to look at. And the fact that they shot in that wide cinemascope, whatever they called it.
Anamorphic.
I knew it sounded A. I was like, I can't remember what it is. I'm not going to try. But like, so you could take it all in. Like, it was beautifully done. I like that it was different. There was a whole heap of stuff I bring up because for various reasons. But I liked it. I thought the characters are cool. I loved Milo and Keita's relationship. I thought that was really lovely. They didn't even kiss. They only had like a sweet little hug. And it was just nice though. It was nice not to have that like...
And have it like shoved in your face.
Like it's all for the girl. Like for him, so much of it was like, this is the right thing to do. And this is a whole people. It was about... all of the Atlantean, not just her, which I really liked. And look, I brought up my issues with it, and I think I get most passionate when there's issues with the movie when I see the potential of the movie. And I think there was so much potential in Atlantis. I still really enjoyed it. But a little part of me is like, oh man, it could have been so good. It could have been so good. Much more. And for me, it was just, who are you talking to? Like, for kids, I think you'd have fun. And but for me, I'm like, oh man, maybe they should have just made this an adult film and just like lent into it and just.
Yeah.
I really love it. And I was so pleased that I watched it again and got to discover it again. Because yeah, I really enjoyed it.
Yeah.
So I think it's great. Hooray. Oh, that's a face.
There's a face going on. I don't know
Zane
what
is
face
giving
it is.
This face that it's
take
like
the face off.
Oh,
no more.
Oh no.
This is gonna
it's
be
a strong
controversial.
Face.
I'm ready. My body's ready. But I shall say before, like even before seeing the face, good debate.
Yeah, you too.
Good
that
debate.
Was remarkable.
I had a lot of fun.
Yeah.
Good points were made. Good. Much fun was had.
It was good nature.
It was good. So it was good debate.
Yeah, it was a great debate. There are a lot of points.
Thanks, this is what I come for.
A lot of
what else about me do you like? You're telling me.
Enough about me. What do you think about me? Okay, let's just break this down.
Ooh.
From the top.
The breakdown, right.
Memorable moments. This one went to Atlantis. Atlantis, just because of high adventure, super lovable, dynamic characters, lots of spectacle. Like, Frozen has a lot of really heartfelt moments, and you did really well listing those off, but Matt just, like, kept throwing these out there, and it was just a matter of points that pushed this topic over to Atlantis. So in the number of memorable moments, that one goes to Atlantis. When it comes to the message, though, you were both very most points were made both for and against in the message category. This one did go to Frozen, though, because Frozen is set up literally as to comment on Disney made for children and the messages that it puts across, and it does it so succinctly and so well. And so I think, like, it literally says, you can't marry a man you just met.
That's my favorite bit.
You can just cut to all the shocked faces of all the previous Disney princesses who have done exactly that.
Exactly.
and that whole betrayal of expectation, I think that really puts it really strongly in Frozen's court there for the message. Atlantis does have its own messages that you pointed out, Matthew. But Stacey did have very solid points about it is Milo coming in and just straight white mailing, fixing everything.
It is a white savior movie.
Yeah.
I mean, they make him king at the end of it.
Yeah.
And there were loyal guards to the previous king.
Yeah.
What about them?
So many other options before they got to him.
They're maybe a few thousand years older than he is. Yeah. A thousand more years experience.
It's a little infant.
But no, he reads good.
Like fetus. You go fetus, rule our kingdom.
Long story short, the message goes to Frozen. When it comes to the movie magic, this one goes to Atlantis.
Whoa.
Both of you spoke a lot about the plot, and you both pointed out very valid plot errors in your film, and Matthew spoke a bit more about how Frozen seemed to set up its world just to break it down with the plot. And Stacey, you didn't fight back quite as hard, so I think you both
it's
earned
my greatest
the exact
weakness.
Yeah, you earned the same amount of points for you, but Matt got a few against Frozen, which gave it to Atlantis on that one.
So aggression solves everything.
Well, we've learned today.
It's more like they both had animation points to be made. Mm. They both had great plot points, but also a few plot errors. And you can see when you can see the writing is when you can kind of point out that something's wrong.
Yeah.
And I think Frozen, because it is making these comments on Disney, has a few more of those moments than Atlantis does, which is more just kind of high rollicking adventure.
Yeah.
Yeah. When it comes to the music, this one has to go to Frozen.
Yeah. That was an uphill battle. I'll admit it.
Even though you made a couple of very snide but apt remarks about Frozen soundtrack, there are a number of songs in Frozen that have lived on ever since. Like, you can just list them off and sing them in a car with your friends without any backing. Yeah, so even though it is a pop record, it's a good pop record. So that one went to let it go. Literally, I have much. Let It Go and Pop written down in my notes there.
That's all you need.
Now, when it comes to that Disney touch, this is a controversial one because there's no clear definition. I kind of hand out points that don't fit anywhere else, and I got you to elaborate a little bit more.
We had to dig.
This one is a tie.
It's just, ooh!
So you both had three points. Specifically, Matt, how this ties into what Disney loved about high adventure storytelling and the examples of how he's done it in the past and how this is reflecting that sort of high adventure Disney film. And Frozen, again, with Disney's awareness of itself and what it's telling children, that's something that only Disney has the pull to do. So what that means is you're two for two with a tie.
What does that mean?
That means that the debate goes to the movie with the overall most points.
Oh. So we're going to have a sudden death, like they were going to fight or something.
Surprise
twist, like some trivia contest about your Disney.
Which movie would you like to know the total score point for first? I'm gonna let Georgie pick.
Let Georgina pick.
Alphabetically.
Atlantis.
Like,
which one goes first? After tallying all the points for and all the points against, Atlantis ended up with 20 points.
Okay. 20. Number to beat.
Frozen ended up with 18.
Oh! Whoa!
Nat 20, baby!
And so Atlantis this week is the better Disney
film. I'm shocked.
Congratulations, Matthew.
Nice dog.
It was, again, like your ability just to kind of keep hitting with those rapid fire points. I think that's what won it for you. But if you think I've made the wrong decision, and I will agree with you if you think that I have, because I could go either way on this debate, as with most.
It was very close.
There will
be a bloody debate.
There will be a social media poll up on our Facebook page. You can go and you can vote there. If Frozen beats out Atlantis there and by a higher percentage than the other social media winners that we've had, then Frozen still has a chance to get through into the second round. I am shocked and surprised by the outcome of this.
Oh, I am too.
But I can only blame myself.
Five-year-old girls everywhere are like, what?
Yeah, there's children like crying in their Elsa costumes.
And we know
to this.
That five-year-olds are our demographic.
That's
so
correct.
I would say I'm sorry, children, but I'm not.
Children, if you love Frozen, go and watch Atlantis. And we'll be seeing, Matthew back with Atlantis in the second round. Congratulations.
That's right. Old Matty's coming back, y'all.
All right. So if you want to reach out to us, you can do that any number of ways. We're available on most social media, Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook. You can find us. You can find us at thatsnotcanon.com/DisneyVersDisney, or you can send us an email at DisneyVersDisney@gmail.com. Thank you, Stacey, for fighting so valiantly for Frozen.
Oh, you're very welcome. Yeah. It was an
Thank
honor.
Thank you. That was amazing.
Yes.
I'm surprised that the Broadway adaptation didn't get brought up.
Oh, it was one of my points, but it got cut for time.
Yeah.
It got cut for time.
All right, and congratulations again, Matthew.
Thank you very much, Grandmaster. I must say, I feel like Balboa taking down Apollo Creed. This is great.
That, I think that is a reference that 5% of our audience will get.
Oh, now I'm going to weep.
And thank you once again to our fact checker of the week, Georgie Purdy.
You are welcome.
We'll be seeing you all same time next week. New debate. Until then, keep watching Disney, everyone.
So, what should I listen to now?
We are Castology. This is our podcast about podcasts. We are your castologists, Patrick Shearer,
Liz Best,
and Zainzy Weber.
Each week, we'll bring you three of the best and sometimes not so best podcasts around. We'll also do the hard work and trawl the RSS feeds to find the newest podcast that should be on your radar.
And then next week, we come back and tell you what we thought of the recommendations and bring three new sparkling podcasts to check out.
Now, will we always agree with each other's picks?
Probably not. But hey, you're clever. You know that's how reviews work.
We're available on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or any podcatcher of your choice. That's Not Gunner Productions podcast.